The following astral journey was my very first and my initiation into shamanism, if you will. At this point in time of my life, I desperately needed answers. Having mixed the proper reagents and done what was necessary to expel my soul from my body, this is the journey upon which I took. Having invoked my four guardian angels, I stop and ponder my workings. I turn and see the guardian angels of the south, and again to the west. But my attention is thwarted as I notice in the west the water from which he rose. It fascinates me, drawing me in until I am standing on the shore right at the edge of the water. It is then that I notice that the water is rippling with movement. I am bound by my curiosity and lean closer to the water's surface. It is marvelously clear and deep within its depths. I see moving things, but I can't quite make out what they are. I will them to come closer. As soon as I unleash my will, something begins to move towards me. I feel excitement and a sense of danger, but my curiosity keeps me bound. Suddenly, the image becomes clear. It is a gaping mouth filled with jagged teeth. Its immensity is becoming apparent, and now fear is taking me over. I peer into the beast's maw and see arms and legs sticking out of its teeth. Crushed skulls line the cracks of its molars. I fall backwards in fear as this colossal beast rises from the water. As drops fall from it and land on the ground, they turn to shards of glass. I close my eyes, and instantly I am back inside my circle, sitting down as the beast roars above me. I look at it through my banishing earth pentagram, and I am amazed at the power it possesses. Protected by my circle, I stand and speak to it. Be not angry with me because of my disturbance, but instead, tell me that which I should learn of you. The great beast quietly peers down at me, ensuring me that it is indeed angry for being disturbed. I speak. If thou would only tell me or show me what I should know, there would no longer be any reason to disturb you further. Once said, the beast began to shrink, and with it, its power of fear. It then began to sink back into the depths of the water. Looking up to behold my guardian, I see him walking across the water towards me. As he comes closer, I suddenly realize that he has been transformed into a voluptuous woman. Ringlets of golden hair cradle her perfect face, and encircled about her head is a brilliant halo that doesn't emanate light, but is reflecting it. She steps off the water and onto the shore. The minute her toes touch the sand, her jade eyes link with mine. She sips from her pomegranate chalice, walks up to my circle, and walks through my banishing pentagram. Standing before me, I take in her beauty. Never before have I seen something so pure, so innocent. Her robes cling tightly to her perfect body, and her curves are magnificent to behold. I know instantly that I love her, and every spark of my being desires nothing else but to possess her. She holds out her chalice and bids me to drink. I do so without any hesitation, for my soul would do nothing but to please her. After I drink, she lovingly takes my face into her hands and kisses me on the lips. The moment we touch, I know her. As if she senses this, she tells me, It is good that you have lingered here long enough to gain understanding. You ask of the Western Quarter what it is you should know. Because you dare, I shall tell you. This is not the direction for you to travel, but that which you already have. All that waits for you here is that great destroyer, Leviathan, who is the embodiment and manifestation of the mistakes you have made this far. To dwell upon them, to stay here, will result in nothing other than self-annihilation. Few there be that have escaped the clutches of the past. For those like you who have, do I come and seek union with. Is I, whom have molded and shaped you into what you have now become. I am the manifestation and culmination of all that you have experienced. You have searched for me and found me, for I am Isis. As you now know, I have been with you always, and I will never leave your side. If you trust in me, together we will dare great and mighty things. She then takes me into her arms and holds me to her bosom. I take in her scents and feel her longing womb in the sacredness of her fertility. Our union is filled with ecstasy far surpassing anything I have ever known before. After a period of rest, she tells me that we must move on and points me towards the northern gate. Through my banishing pentagram, I gaze out upon Uriel. His skin is turned to bronze, and he appears as hard as stone. He stands before two pillars, between which is a cavern of earth. Out of it is the smell of death and decay. The floor is covered with worms, beetles, and insects. I gaze up at this stony figure and I ask, "What is it that you would have me to know?" From deep within the figure before me, I feel more than I hear, for his lips never move. These words, "I am Harware, that which you have formed out of clay with your very hands." Isis turns to me and speaks to me. "To give life to your creation, you must share with it some of your wisdom." She takes the cup and tilts it into his lips, and instantly the stone is turned to flesh. In his right hand he holds an ankh, which he raises towards Isis. I look upon her and see the radiance of a mother who has just given birth. She looks upon the youth with pride and satisfaction. Puzzled, I ask her to explain, and she speaks the words, "Behold, Horus, our son, the product of our union." Horus looks upon us with love and appreciation and tells me, "Behold, my father and my mother, thank you for giving me form and intelligence." In his left hand he holds a crook with which he uses hook two bundles that were lying at his feet. Secured at the crook, he flings them over his right shoulder. I go to tell him that it would be easier to carry this over the other shoulder and would be less awkward. But Isis silences me with a finger and these words, "You must now let him part to follow his own path and to learn from his own mistakes. You have given him substance and wisdom. You are finished with this quarter." Sensing a pattern, I turn of my own accord towards the eastern quarter. Through my banishing pentagram, all I can perceive is light, pure and divine. I know that this is the way I must go. I turn to my soulmate and see trepidation upon her features. She knows something that I do not, yet she says nothing. Deciding to take the lead, I step towards my pentagram and reach out to the light beyond. As my hand comes into contact with it, I watch in horror and then scream in agony as my hand first turns to cinders and then into ash. A part of me is now gone, and despite all of my will, my hand will not come back. Isis speaks to me. It is as I feared. Before you can enter the Eastern Gate, you must pass a fearful test. Only then will you be worthy to travel the road, which will reveal your destiny. There is only one other gate left, and as I peer through my banishing pentagram into the south, I see only darkness. But I feel heat as if from a furnace, and the wind from there is heavy with the smells of brimstone and sulfur and the distant sounds of tortured screams of agony. As I search for any sign of any manifestation, I turn to my love. What is there to learn from nothing? She tells me, it is good that this manifestation is not here, for that would mean that you were in his debt. To learn from this quarter, it is better that you should go to him, which means you must leave the protection of your circle. You must now become the guide and not the follower. You must face this by your own accord. Though you may not see me, I am with you always. And with that, we merge as one. Being as ready as I'll ever be, I step through my banishing pentagram into the darkness. The heat is almost intolerable. I turn around for a glimpse of safety within my circle, only to find it gone. And as far as I can see, in every direction is only darkness. I know the direction my feet were pointing, so on I plunge into the southern furnace. I walk for quite some time, and nothing changes. I look about, and all I see is more darkness, and suddenly I feel terribly, horribly alone. I travel further, praying that something happens, but still I encounter nothing but more darkness and even greater heat. I am growing tired and have had enough. I refuse to walk any further, so I stop. My fury begins to grow, and I become passionate about all of this wasted time. In anger, I shout, "Show yourself, and let's get on with it. Reveal yourself to me, and let us both resolve our fates." My voice carries far and deep into the darkness, and I am answered by a deep rumbling under my feet. In the distance before me, I see what appears to be light in the form of fire. I begin to make out the shapes of two mountains as the fire comes out from behind them. A flaming sword suddenly appears between the mountaintops, and by the light of its flame, I see a colossal figure rising up. He is wearing a deep red breastplate, and draped across his shoulders is a green cloak. His head is covered in a great helm, from which protrude two massive horns from some great auroch. He speaks to me in a commanding voice and says, "You dare challenge me?" He raises his sword for battle in his right hand, and in his left he holds up a pair of scales. As he glares down upon me, I am overtaken by fear. He speaks again, "Know thou not that I am the harbinger of death, the angel of destruction, the executor of vengeance?" My fear has me paralyzed. I can't fight this. What have I invoked? How can I escape? I hear the calming words of my lover from within, with knowledge and wisdom, and in my hand appears a book. I open it and find the seal of Jupiter. Shutting out the colossus standing before me, I conjure Jupiter to my side. The instant he appears, he looks up, gauges the situation, and laughs. This puny, frail man armed with nothing but his laughter. In his mirth, he turns to me and speaks the words, "Fear not. For it is written within, thy spirit is immortal, it cannot be killed, only quenched. But the ego is precious and susceptible to annihilation, which forces it to return back to the darkness from which it came. He then walks up in front of me and points at the Colossus's great horns, and turns to me and speaks thus, "Are not those the most ridiculous horns you have ever seen?" At this, the Colossus becomes infuriated and roars, "You dare mock my regal being?" And with a mighty swing, he brings his sword down with devastating force. I can perceive no possible way to survive this. There, Jupiter stands completely defenseless with this horrible weapon of destruction bearing down upon him. And he is still laughing. He doesn't even raise a hand to thwart the blow. I see that the sword will meet him where the shoulder meets the neck. At the moment it lands, there is a horrible clap of thunder, and that great and terrible weapon shatters into several pieces. Suddenly, Jupiter turns serious, solemn, and speaks, "I am the manifestation of divine law. I can neither be broken nor changed. Those who try will only shatter themselves upon my rigidity." He then turns to me with a great jovial grin and speaks to me, "Thus is it written, when thou standest alongside me and with me, then you shall know peace." Turning back to a furious and bewildered Colossus, he tells it, "Again, behold the foolishness of such buffoonery." And his mirth is catching as I too begin to laugh at great power that has come to naught with use of divine law. As we laugh together, the Colossus begins to shrink like a deflated balloon. If only I could see under his helm and gaze upon his ridiculous face. Caught up in my mirth, a funny thought crosses my mind, and before I know it, the words cross my lips. While pondering your demise, I also ask that you ponder this. How is it possible for a sow to grow such great horns? At this, Jupiter quits laughing and looks at me with solemn eyes. He tells me in sadness, "You have committed grave error, for you are not yet worthy to be divine law. It is written, every malevolent act shall be meted out with due justice, until the scales have been balanced anew. By your demeaning ridicule, you have begun the final test before your true journey begins. I shall now leave you to your fate. You have no longer any need to invoke me, for I am omnipresent. Nothing exists without my order." And with that, he vanishes, leaving me to face this fiery warrior that is now only slightly larger than I. He stands 20 paces away and prepares himself for battle. I say, "Before justice is done, remove thy helm so that I may see plainly what I am up against." He raises his arms. I am at once afraid and excited to see his true nature. I notice first that his arms are black as coal, and when he removes his helm, I see not the head of a man, but that of a jackal. He shouts at me and speaks, "I am Anubis, guardian of the underworld, rectifier of malevolence, and master of slaves." And thus began his charge as he came upon me. The most dreadful of all words came out of his mouth. "Thy annihilation is imminent, for it is written, the wages of sin is death." As I gazed upon those horrible claws and listened to the snapping of his jaws, I planted my feet firmly in my stance and focused as much energy as I could, and willed into a blue energetic sword. Anubis hesitated not and was quickly upon me. I swung my sword desperately and missed horribly as Anubis tore into my throat, barreling me over and pinning me beneath his weight. I could feel my flesh being torn asunder. There was no blood. It was as if I was solid meat and Anubis was feasting upon it. I quickly tried to get my hands around his throat, but as soon as I gained hold, his hind legs came up and began to shred my abdomen. I could feel myself becoming less and less with every bite and claw. I then began to thrash violently from side to side. I now understand the quenching of the spirit, for mine was being quenched quickly against my will. Anubis has me at his mercy. How will I pass this test? And my lover was there within me with these words, with wisdom and knowledge. Then I knew that I could not fight Anubis with instinct or passion, but with planned will. So I concentrated on what was happening, and I saw that as his jaws tore away my flesh, with his head would snap away with the force of the tear, leaving him vulnerable for but a second. Then I pondered what I would do and how he would react. The moment came when Anubis sought to tear out a huge chunk of my chest. I gasped as his teeth sunk in deep and scraped at my heart. He yanked once, then twice, and with a third huge jerk tore it free, flinging his snout wide to my left. I quickly grabbed his right ear and pulled down, twisting his head even further away with my right hand, and with my left I snatched his esophagus. Remembering previous experience, my legs were also instantly up and over his shoulders. I locked my ankles and squeezed with all of my will. His hind legs couldn't reach me, and his forelegs were pinned beneath me. He furiously twisted his head, and I lost purchase of his throat. As he turned to bite into my torn abdomen, I crammed my fist deep into his maw, reaching deep into his throat, and there I pressed, choking him with my legs, drowning him with my hand. I closed my eyes and focused all of my will into smothering everything out of him, until finally Anubis completely limp. Still, I continued until I no longer had any willpower left. I then let him go. I laid back, torn, shredded, and exhausted beyond measure. I watched Anubis until I no longer could sustain myself, and I passed into a deep unconscious. My next conscious moment was the feel of a loving tongue upon my wounds. I opened my eyes to behold Anubis. Realizing that I was conscious, he spoke to me. "Now you are my master, for you have conquered me. I cannot heal the wounds I have inflicted, but I can take you back to the edge of hell from whence you came." And so he carried me and laid me at the bottom of my vanishing pentagram. With a parting glance, he spoke these words to me. "If thou shalt ever lose control of thyself, there I shall be to attempt to be thy master once more." I then began to crawl back into the protection of my sacred circle and back into the arms of my lover. She wept great tears of sympathy and smiled with pride that I had passed the final test. With that realization, I too smiled and looked toward the east. I was so filled with joy of seeing that radiant divine light again that I began to sing a song of adoration. As I sung, the beams of light reached out to me and suffused me with energy anew, and my song became one of promise and praise, and I could feel the light beckoning me into it. So, filled with new energy and ready to face my destiny, my lover and I walked hand in hand into my vanishing pentacle and into the light. As my eyes began to adjust and my spirit geared up for this new level of awakening, I took in my surroundings. A small path led out into a barren landscape filled with small hills. I could not perceive the source of light anywhere, but I definitely felt its presence. It hummed within me, and I found that I could take of it and make it my own without diminishing the source one bit. At the top of the hill before me stood Raphael. He stood there as if waiting, staring off into nothing. I began to walk towards him, and as if I passed some invisible barrier, he suddenly was aware of me. He raised his trumpet and heralded me, and he spake these words, "You have now become one of the elect." You did not choose to succumb to the perils of your existence like so many others, but have dared the road less traveled. Very few have stood where you stand, and true enlightenment is all that awaits ahead of you. And with that, he stepped to the side. With my lover at my side, I crested that hill and looked out to see the path go back down and then up to an even higher hill. And upon this hill stood another figure, but I was too far away to make out any details. With focused steps, we made our way onward, ever keeping my eyes on this figure before me. The closer I approached, the more majestic and regal he became. He was definitely a figure to be admired, and exuded a strength of will like no other, but I still could not make out who or what it was. So knowing that my love only knew that which I came through, I appealed to Jupiter for help. He answered me with these words: "It is written that all energy vibrates, and that to know a different vibration, one must tune his own vibration to the same frequency." And so I reached out with my spiritual essence to get a feel of the other's essence, and at once I recognized this being as Set. Excitement entered into me, and I indulged it for a moment, for I would finally see his face. I continued closer with focused, purposeful steps. When I was close enough that I should have been able to make out his face, I was met with a shimmer instead. As I approached closer, my vibe also began to match his, and I knew that this was a powerful entity. Set was marvelous to behold, for his power put everything else I had witnessed to shame. As I stepped up again, about 10 paces away, it became clear he had no face, nor head, but instead a dark flame. 5 paces away, and I asked, "What must I learn from thee?" And he answered me with these words: "I am Set, the first consciousness, the prince of darkness. I am the dawning of realization." And like a moth drawn to a flame, I approached even closer, for I deeply desired to peer into that dark flame. And at 2 paces away, I saw a glassy surface upon the flame, and I felt enlightenment as I took a hold of this realization and met what I knew I would see. I gazed at the face that was my own, and he spoke these words: "Long have I waited here for you to make it thus far. Of my own, I can go no further. You ask what it is I would have you know, and this is my answer." And with that, he began to tell me all of my own parables. He taught me all of the lessons that I have taught to others. And as I listened to the familiar words, my confidence in my work grew tremendously, and I swelled with it, feeling glory beyond measure, and all about me were harmonies of the most wonderful sounds I had ever heard, and his flame united with my own, and together our radiance washed over all. Everything that I could see. I looked down at myself and was amazed to see that whatever energy I could gather, it now became mine, and I could direct this radiance according to my will. So I began to will as much energy as I possibly could into myself, and my radiance swelled. When I had obtained my full glory, I became fat and lethargic. I could not pull in one more bit, for I felt I would burst. I then basked in my brilliance and beheld myself through Set. And then came a new realization that I must claim for myself, so I spoke these words: "I am Lucifer, the great morning star. I have become a beacon to those in the darkness, and as I look about myself, there is nothing I cannot do." Yet I still wanted more power, more glory. I wanted the entire cosmos to see the wonder that is me. As great as I am still not great enough. Tell me, Jupiter, how do I gain from here? And he answered with these words: "It is written, in order to gain energy, you must use your energy." Pondering this, I considered my bleak surroundings and the empty road that I am traveling. To experiment, I pulled out a portion of my energy and let it go.
Apart from me, it quickly became unstable and dissipated. This frustrated me, so I drew out a little more and cupped it in my hand. The energy of it caused it to hover about an inch. As it began to shake and lose its stability, I enforced my will upon it and held it together. But once I released it from my will, it again wanted to come apart. Frustrated even more, I pulled all of my will and focused it all around the ball of energy, pressing upon it on all sides. As I did so, it became denser. Not to be thwarted again, I exerted all of my will upon it again, and denser it became so that I could begin to feel some weight to it. I compressed it again, and until the seventh time, there was a loud pop, and my orb of energy now became a black hole. Its desire was so tremendous that I could feel it pulling at the fabric of the cosmos itself. Out of panic that I had created some sort of monster, I quickly stuck my finger into the hole. It instantly latched on as if a newborn babe, and my glorious radiance was being quickly depleted. But I could not remove my finger. Fearing it would require too much of me, I appealed again to Jupiter, and he answered with these words, "It is written, to become stagnant and complacent is the equivalent of death. To grow, you must continue." So I continued east, now going only up. I can see the top of the next hill, but there's nothing there. More importantly, the higher I climbed, the more energy I could contain, and therefore nourish my newborn babe. Finally, after 365 steps, my black hole had satisfied its hunger and fell quickly to the ground. In an instant, I cradled it in my right hand. I beheld what I had created, and I saw an orb crackling with electricity. Watching these many lightning strikes began to fascinate me. I watched for a moment and noticed that where each bolt struck the surface of the orb, something else was happening. I had to see what it was, but it was too small and too fast, so I shrank myself so that the orb would appear larger, and then I slowed down time for the orb so that each strike lasted longer, and there I saw it. For a moment, after each strike, a flame remained behind, but only for a moment. As I brought the orb closer to my breast, the flames lasted longer and began to dance about, but away from me, they died quickly. To remedy this, I pulled more energy from myself, and this time I only compressed it thrice and suffused it with as much power as it could hold and still be stable. Then I moved my orb close to my star and found that the star caused the surface of the orb closest to it to flicker wildly with energy, while the backside was almost devoid of any activity. I also found that the closer my orb came to my star, the more my star wanted to absorb the orb into itself, for as it released the compressed energy I gave it, it sought to replenish it. Holding it at the edge of too close, the activity facing the star was at its peak, and every now and then a bolt would let loose that would wrap around to the back, leaving behind a tiny dancing fire that soon became little vortexes, or vortices. Holding the orb between thumb and forefinger, I gave it a spin, and it took off into its own orbit around my star. Wishing to continue onwards, I looked up to find that I had crested the next hill, and before me stood the greatest mountain I had ever seen. As I pondered this mountain and the tremendous distance to it, I pulled my lover close and asked her to ponder with me what might lie on the other side of that mountain. And then I noticed it was becoming brighter, as if this was a dawn of a new day. The celestial music was becoming louder, and there became an electrifying hum in the air. Isis and I both knew that something was coming, and come it did. With a sonic clap, the greatest light I ever beheld suddenly peeked from behind the mountain. I could make out the individual rays as they shined forth, and where they landed or ended, there was life at its points. Birds of all kinds, and wherever it touched the ground, plants, trees, and shrubs appeared. As I gazed upon the magnitude of what I was seeing and how insignificant my own light was compared to this, I began to feel envious of its power and jealous of its abilities. How dare there be a greater light than mine? And suddenly a voice boomed haughtily out through the cosmos, reaching to the farthest corners I could conceive. The words were thus, "There is no need for envy nor jealousy, for you are in the presence of what lies ahead. Behold your future. Behold your destiny. For if you continue to seek out the day, there shall be no limits to your glory." I desired much to know about this entity, for if he was my future, then I must know him, thus knowing from whence he came. So I went forth, and with my spiritual essence, to commune with his, but couldn't. No matter how much I tried, I could not raise my vibe to his level. He was far beyond my comprehension. And then I heard his words again. "To know me, you had only to ask, for knowledge of me can only be given by me." As I pondered the significance of this, I suddenly realized that the words reverberated the way it did across, because he was facing the same direction as I, which put his back to me. I spoke. "Then I ask, reveal yourself to me so that I may know the source of such tremendous divine energy." That great light began to turn, and I saw his face, a familiar face. "I know you already." And he smiled that smug, arrogant smile and spoke, "Thou hast come here in search of truth, and you know correctly that I am Amun-Ra, the first to follow the light, the first priest, the first trekker upon the left-hand path, the first seeker of truth. Behold what I have become, for I am now the creator of universes. Long have I awaited someone to seek out my glory and travel as far as thee. As you can see, those of us who have chosen this path are very few, and this should not be. They were not ready in my day, so I left all of my peers behind so that I would not fall victim to their destruction. I give you therefore a greater work to do. As you travel east and gain in glory, if you wish to stand where I now stand with even more glory than I, then you must make your glory strong, for there are multitudes who cannot pass the tests and are stuck behind each of the other three gates. As you gaze about yourself, you will notice that even as you have traveled east, your circle and therefore the other three gates have traveled with you. Each soul trapped in these three hells should also experience their own glory. By setting them free, by showing them the way to immortality, you will be given glory far surpassing mine, for you shall reap the happiness, love, joy, and appreciation for everyone to whom you give immortality. The limits of your divine energy and the strength of your will are placed there by you alone. Strengthen others' wills, and you strengthen your own. Show others how to increase their glory, and yours will increase as well. As he turned back towards the east, I asked, "Because you have become so magnanimous and I am so small in comparison, I cannot perceive what is beyond you. Tell me what it is that you see before you." And he answered me thus, "When you stand where I stand, then you shall know." I looked to my right and beheld Anubis. I could hear the wailing and screaming of his slaves at my attention. He burst into the fiery hound of hell, and I knew that he would not give them up without a fight. But I have defeated him once already. I peered to my left and beheld Harware and Stone standing guard over the mouth of his decaying cave, and knew that none would give up the sensual corrupting pleasures of the flesh. I could see their bodies lying there in the dirt, their eyes closed and their mouths open in ecstasy while their flesh was being eaten away by disgusting vermin. And then I turned to that which was behind me, and there, directly behind me in my immediate past, I beheld a small black flame. I reached down and cradled it lovingly in my hands. That your aeon has become stagnant as well. And now a new aeon begins, for the darkness disintegrates power over time and drains divine energy. If our children are to gain in power, to truly become gods in their own right, then they must come forth into the day and seek the power and glory of those who have gone before, traveling east into the light. For only a greater light can give fuel to a lesser. The message of mine is simple. Come out of the darkness of chaos and receive your glory by stepping forth into the day and diligently gathering unto yourself the brilliant light of divine energy, thus assuming the form of Lucifer himself. Behold the Aeon of Ra.